Good evening and welcome, dear blessed friends. It is so good to be with you again. Excuse me. The Christ candle is lit for us, and I can see other candles too, just affirming for us that Christ is always with us and in us and through us, and that we know that our shared intention and attention matters. Our work matters for ourselves, for one another, those close to us, and in fact, for all humanity. So as I was pondering this time and this day, it came to me that we spend a great deal of attention and time in the season of Lent, with all of its preparations and renunciations, preparing for Easter. And we celebrate Easter in one glorious day of alleluias and feasts and gatherings and celebrations and beautiful music, and then it's over. But in fact, Easter is a season all of itself, and it is a season of 50 days. Today, for example, is Thursday in the octave of Easter. So I wonder, what is the season of Easter about? What does a resurrected life look like? What is the invitation for this time, this season of Easter? So as we look to our forebears and our lineage, this evening's reflection comes from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, whose death anniversary was April 10th, 1955. And for him, that was Easter Sunday. And of course, for us, it is Saturday in this first week of Easter. And this reflection is really quite extraordinary because it includes his own personal aim. And I wonder what it would be for us to have an aim that was so auspicious, if you will, to carry us forward. So maybe he gives us a glimpse as to what the season is about. He wrote, "What the God of the cross was looking for in me was the natural expansion of my being, as well as its sanctification, through the synthesis which is affected by experience, detachment and attachment, renunciation and development, all coming together as one within me. And this was realized in a deliberate change of direction." Just supposing a man in all sincerity of heart has one day made up his mind to do what every man who seeks for happiness and holiness will increasingly find himself obliged to do. That is to allow the ascensional faith in God and the forward driving faith in the human to react freely from one another in the depths of his own being. Then such a one will at times be unable to shake off a feeling of terror. He will not be able to hold back, but will be frightened by the novelty, the boldness, and at the same time, the paradoxical potentialities of these attitudes that he finds within himself, intellectually and emotionally, and obliged to adopt them if he is to be faithful to his fundamental aim, which is to attain heaven by bringing earth to its fulfillment. To Christify matter, that sums up the whole venture of my innermost being, a grand and glorious venture, and I still tremble often even as I pursue it. But I find it impossible not to hazard myself in it. So powerful was this force with which the levels of the universal and the personal come together and have gradually closed up over my head to form one single vault, a canopy, if you will, a canopy of extraordinary intention. May it be so that we ourselves place ourselves under this canopy. And so tonight, aware that, as Tim Cook once said, that everything is about energy. If we, in fact, take our collective energy, what an incredible force this is for the whole world. Let us place ourselves in this imminent trust and receptivity. And with back upright and heart wide open, in minds in directed attention, let us take a collective breath. Then gather in every hidden part of our being, everything that is resistant or hurt or that seems dark and harsh and unforgiven and shameful and maimed and ugly and damaged and transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as known, as radiant in light. And we breathe out all of this healing goodness into the world. May it be so. We will enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina, and our passage will be read three times. Each time with the silent pause in between. How long must I bear the pain in my soul and live with sorrow all the day? How long will fear rule my life? Notice my heart and answer me, O my beloved. Enlighten me, lest I walk as one dead to life. Lest my fears say, we have won the day. Lest they rejoice in their strength. As I trust in your steadfast love, my heart will rejoice, for in you is freedom. I shall sing to the beloved who has answered my prayers 1,000-fold. Come, O beloved, make your home in my heart. Help me to sacrifice this habitual, mechanical suffering. How long must I bear this pain in my soul and live with sorrow all the day? How long will fear rule my life? Notice my heart and answer me, O my beloved. Enlighten me, lest I walk dead to life, lest I walk as one dead to life. Lest my fears say we have won the day, lest they rejoice in their strength. As I trust in your steadfast love, my heart will rejoice, for in you is freedom. I shall sing to the beloved who has answered my prayers 1,000-fold. Come, O beloved, make your home in my heart. Help me to sacrifice this habitual, mechanical suffering. How long must I bear this pain in my soul and live with sorrow all the day? How long will fear rule my life? Notice my heart and answer me, O my beloved. Enlighten me, lest I walk as one dead to life. Lest my fears say we have won the day. Lest they rejoice in their strength. As I trust in your steadfast love, my heart will rejoice, for in you is freedom. I shall sing to the beloved who has answered my prayers 1,000-fold. Come, O beloved, make your home in my heart. Help me to sacrifice this habitual, mechanical suffering. Amen. You are now invited to share what you received from this passage and give us the gift of what came to meet you. And perhaps it is just what someone else needs to hear this evening. So you may raise your hand and be called upon. Deborah Hale, or Don Hale.
That was beautiful. Everything that has been said so far has been so profound. What I heard first was live with sorrow all the day. Mm-hmm. And I thought back to a time in my life when that was probably true. Mm-hmm. And I thought about how long it's been since I felt that way, that I was living with sorrow all the day. And the second piece that I heard was, come, beloved, make your home in my heart. And I feel like that my holy longing has put that prayer into motion for some time. And then the third thing was, answered my prayers 1,000-fold. And I was thinking about this community and all the blessings of even just being on retreat with friends year after year in the silence for 5, 7, 10 days. Just my prayers have been answered 1,000-fold, just to have the richness of the relationships with the children and parents and friends in the community. So that's my sharing.
Thank you so much, Deborah. And of course, you are a great blessing, 1,000-fold too many. Thank you. Someone else have an Easter message for us. Deborah Jean.
There we go. Is that better?
Yes.
I wanted to say to the other Deborah, my little kid loves it when she shares on Sunday. It just, I didn't like Sunday school as a kid, but I love listening to her teaching. It's wonderful. What hit me very short was, help me to overcome, help me to make this sacrifice, help me to stop the suffering, because I try to do things on my own, but I don't have that ability. So help me.
Help me. Yes.
That's my Thank favorite you. Short prayer.
Yes.
Thank you.
A very good one. Thank you, Deborah Jean. Lisa, please.
Good evening. I heard for in you there is freedom, and that is freedom from those mechanical behaviors. And that's a space that is so obvious when I'm in it. However, I'm not in it very long. The identification and the mechanical behaviors can, you know, co-opt that. But that's the promise. And I've had that experience of being in that freedom. And so my prayer is to self-remember, to remember love, and to remember that energy and that it is always available.
Indeed. Thank you, Lisa. Marcia, please. You have to unmute. Yes, there you go.
This is the first time I've shared, and this is what came, so I'm going to go with it. It is, come, oh, beloved, make your home in my heart. Come, oh, beloved, make your home in my heart. Come, oh, beloved, make your home in my heart. Come, oh, come, beloved, or something like that at the end. I have no idea, but that's what came.
That's beautiful, Marcia. Thank you so much. Tom Parker.
Well, I heard the phrase, make your home in my heart as well, and it made me stop and maybe assess what kind of a home I have for the beloved in my heart. I think rather than a permanent residence, sometimes it's more like an Airbnb, and it needs a lot of cleaning and restoration. So my aim is to actually make a home in my heart for the beloved.
Thank you, Tom. Sally McGill, please.
Thank you. What I heard was enlighten me lest I walk as one dead to life. Because I felt like, you know, I don't feel like I'm suffering or living in sorrow all the day, but I feel like I'm just sort of living in a mechanical way, in that just even in that I am sort of dead to life. I'm dead, you know, I'm dead to the joys that life could be giving me. And then I liked also that last line about something like, help me sacrifice my habitual mechanical suffering. That maybe I have this false belief that, you know, life is just ordinary and I shouldn't expect any joy from it. And maybe I need to sacrifice that kind of mechanical belief. And then on one of the later readings, when it was, how long must I bear this pain in my soul? I felt like, you know, I've always read that as a question addressed to God, but this time I heard it, that's a question addressed to me. Mm. How long am I going to choose to just live in a mechanical way that makes me sort of dead to life? And instead, can I really pray, come, O beloved, make your home in my heart, and open my heart to the joys that life has to offer.
Thank you, Sally. May it be so. Nancy, please.
My offering tonight is a picture, because as you were reading, I was praying in color, and this is what came.
Lovely. Lovely. Thank you, Nancy. Beautiful. Visio Divina. Thank you. Yes. So we have time for another. Esther.
Hi.
Hi.
Good to be here. So what I wanted to share was the words that came to me was sacrificing the mechanical suffering. That phrase really stuck with me. And that was an Easter message for me as well, because I really wanted to participate in this intentional suffering and conscious love. So today, what I decided to do, even though it was very uncomfortable, I joined a Zoom visual for Asian American, incidents that happen. There's a lot of suffering, and I'm not one to just participate in that, because it's exposing pain and vulnerability. But I decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, state and show up and consciously suffer, intentionally suffer, and show my love for humanity, not just Asian communities, but, you know, we are all in it together. Whatever ignorances people are suffering from, I want to show up and say that is not who we are in our essence, and we all need to love one another. And there's so much in Venn diagram, there's so much we are alike, and there's very little differences which are on the surface anyhow. So I just wanted to share that, and I wanted to just keep that in mind, that it is so important for me to live as and is like Christ. So I just thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Esther. Thank you. That is the essence of this season of the year. And so I thank you and everyone who shared, and all of us present, that we hold these sharings in our heart. It seems like the mosaic that was formed by these sharings give different perspectives on what this season of Easter, these 50 days, is really about in its essence. So I'm very grateful for each of you. Well, this evening, we're going to continue our journey into our bodies, our time bodies, our second body, our incarnation with a capital I, and our wholeness in the midst of suffering and is in the midst of being one in the body of Christ, as Esther pointed out. And so our work is for each of us and all of us. And it's my joy to introduce Beverly McCune, who will accompany us on this journey. Bev, please.
Thank you, Marianne, and hi, everyone. We've had a big 2 weeks here since we last met. And 2 weeks ago, our class was a second one on time body work. And Peter gave us some ideas of more in the email, more ideas of how to work with that. And then last week, we had a beautiful Easter message about ultimate reality and resurrection and crucifixion. And so we've got some time to share about that. I'm going to bring up those emails so that we can see what they actually included. So this time body 2 weeks ago, Peter had us reread the email several times throughout the week, noticing what arises. Our practice was to choose one or more of the five practical ways of working with the time body. And those are on the left there: busyness, fidgeting, and rushing, fears of the future, healing in the now after painful past events, wishing in the now for the future, or listening in the now for hints from your future self. And he suggested that we aim to verify these ideas in our own experience and what worked and didn't work for us. And then if there's anything else about the making amends for the March practice, that's something to share as well. And then last week, we had this beautiful Easter message where we were asked to look at what impressions landed in us from that. And if our understanding of salvation, redemption, and sacrifice deepened, and how does practicing resurrection look for you practically now? And that we were invited to practice Visio Divina with this beautiful image, and of course, to self-remember in Christ. So we can share on about either one of those and just raise your virtual hand and we'll call on you. So who would like to begin with reflections on these past 2 weeks? Are there any more time body reflections? Lori, please.
Hi, Bev. Well, I actually was beginning to do this time body work during class 2 weeks ago. During someone's sharing, and actually it was Gloria, I don't know if you're here, but I'm so grateful for your sharing that night because it started me on a journey because I could hear in her sharing that something amazing had happened to her, and she was making all these connections, and I couldn't necessarily follow all the connections because they were her connections that she was making. And I could see that in some way that she was expressing knowing all together and seeing all together. But at the same time, I was having in my body, some stuff was rising up, and it felt like anxiety, and it felt like something was gonna happen bad. And I just was sitting with that and feeling into that and, you know, doing inquiry on that and welcoming that. And I came to realize that that she was showing me something about the collective time body, like Esther was just talking about, like the collective, a collective feeling about when women start using their voices, and when they start having realizations and making connections. And sometimes I think in our collective time body, there has not been a good reaction to that. And you know, it's in our DNA, you know, people have been burned at the stake, people have been, you know, for myself, as I did this further exploration, I realized that even in, you know, I don't have to look any farther back than my own family of origin to see that, you know, when somebody started speaking up, there was sometimes violence that came about. And so it was just really amazing to just feel into all of that and to realize that how she was received, how Gloria was received, nothing bad happened. She was just received, you know, her sharing was received lovingly. And it was safe right here, right now. It's absolutely safe. And that, you know, this work was so profound, you know, because it was healing a lot of, I feel like, just bringing to light and letting go of a lot of old stuff. So I'm so grateful for that opportunity to, and for all of our practices, inquiry and welcoming, and going within to just go, okay, you know what, my goodness, what is that all about? This is just a person sharing her experience. And so I also want to thank Gloria, if you're here tonight, for taking me on that journey. And it's an example also to me of how each of us are teachers by sharing. We teach one another so much, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lori. It's a beautiful witness to the power of our sharing and how it can be so useful for others. So thank you. Thank you. Tracy, please.
Hey, Beth, can you hear me?
Tracy, yes.
Hi. Yes, well, I really appreciated the invitation to meet with our future selves. Mm-hmm. And a lot of good insights came from that. But I think one of the most interesting things was that I had an imagination around my future self, which was not a future I would want. And it was really interesting to see that this was just completely unquestioned, that when I think about the future, I imagine some sort of, you know, like Armageddon scenario, right? You know, kind of post-environmental apocalypse kind of scenario. And so I didn't even realize I was doing this, but I'm walking around with some, you know, very dark kind of picture of what my life will be like in whatever time frame this is, 10 years or whatever that may be. And it was interesting to see the struggle in me with wanting to let that go, that somehow I believe that somehow that negative view of my own future is somehow protecting me, like somehow it's preparing me for the doom and gloom that's coming. And then I realized, but wait, you know, I'm co-creating my own reality. I'm bringing this into this future in the manifestation by somehow unconsciously believing in this stuff. What do I wish? What do I really wish for my future self? And can I imagine that future self? You know, what would I wish in terms of my own growth and growth in being and circumstance? So it was really beautiful, and I think she really blessed me and gave me some wisdom and spoke to me in a way that I knew was God speaking to me in my circumstance. And you know, it's just interesting. I guess God, it's just beautiful that God has so many ways of speaking to us. And I remember years ago, Tim making a, he would tell an anecdote about, you know, giving Barbara spiritual advice. And he got this insight at one point from, you know, voice of God saying, "Hey, I don't need to do a bank shot off your lips to Barbara's ears." Well, and I know that was probably perfectly true. But in my circumstance, I felt like I needed my future self to do a bank shot to my current self. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, God just has infinite ways of reaching us and touching us. And sometimes that's just what we need, mysteriously. So it was interesting and kind of funny in a strange way, and very helpful. So I'm grateful for the homework. Thank you.
Oh yeah, thank you, Tracy. What you described is very familiar to me. Yes, it does. Thinking of worst case scenarios does feel like a preparation. So I won't be shocked. You know, I'm prepared. I am prepared. Yeah, very familiar. Thank you for sharing that. Kathy, please.
Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to share about a revelatory experience I had in silence after reading the Easter or Holy Week email. And the only sort of analogy I can give to this revelation is that I grew up in an era of always knowing man walked on the moon. So I was always like, yeah, man walked on the moon. Yeah, we built a rocket and it went to the moon and like we walked on it. And then I remember watching the Apollo documentary series that was made by National Geographic and just being like, oh my gosh, we built a vehicle and we went to the moon and we walked on the moon. And I had this the same sort of I guess deeper awareness of the improbability of the power of the message of Christ, especially the quote. I mean, I say it's improbable. Maybe truth is not so improbable, but I had a sense of the improbability of it. I give you a new commandment, love one another as I have loved you, so you also should love one another. And I had this realization of like what a revolutionary idea that must have been at the time. The time in human history that had been previously ruled by some other commandments. And I had a sense of like how profound it must be that this message has traveled through the eons and created such a powerful energetic movement of our current Christianity, I guess you might say. So anyway, that was what my impressions were of Easter. And it was really beautiful. So
yes, thank you. It sounds like you were left with a sense of awe. Thank you. Gay, please.
There's so much in the last 2 weeks. I hardly know where to start, but I will start with the time body idea. Several things came to me that were sort of new. One was I started this particular work several years ago in a forgiveness retreat. And at the time I knew the relationship that most, that I still carried with me, the resentment, the anger, the pain. And so I knew right away that was the relationship that I wanted to heal. It was pretty far in the past, like several decades. And I began by finding a particular episode, one particular episode that seemed to sort of exemplify my story and how I carried that story around with me for years, thinking that it totally justified my anger and my resentment. And I told it to a lot of people, including myself, on a daily basis. So I really have gone back and worked on that particular incident from time to time. But a couple of weeks ago, when we started reading about the time body, I thought, okay, I'm going to take this up again and see if I can get some movement here. And it actually happened. This movement for me, in which I actually could see and feel that woman, that young woman, in that particular situation with that person, and the pain that she was in. And it was not, the interesting thing was, as it turned out, with this work, I discovered that it was my state at the time. It was like like Deborah said a minute ago, I can think back on my state at the time and remember how hopeless I was, how sad, how angry, and so forth. I felt it so clearly, and I saw it in such an objective way that I could see the other person in a totally different light. It was like a bolt of lightning. I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. So at that time, when I started this forgiveness work, one thing that was in my mind, I thought, gosh, I've got so many things to forgive. How am I ever going to get this done? Because I had somehow in my mind, I thought I had to do these one at a time. And the interesting thing about this experience was this particular movement, it's like since I saw the state of the woman and now could feel in the present state how different it is, how totally different my state is. And wondering, okay, there's all of this sequential time that's gone past, and here I am different. And, you know, I can only think and thank God and grace and the work and this community and, you know, all of the pieces that all the readings that we do and so forth and all the people we have to talk to, our work partners, our spiritual journey groups. That is what has shifted, of course. So I could see my time body somehow, instead of this is kind of hard for me to explain. I could see it instead of a set of sequential steps, I could see it like from a higher perspective and see it like one thing. Yes. My time body was one thing. So the question about my future self was, I can only trust that if that future self is in a different state than my present self, all I have to do is just keep surrendering, just keep surrendering to God. And of course, wish for more compassion, wish for more patience. And I can only trust that as different as my state was then to now, then it will be different in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay. What beautiful work. Isn't it amazing when we can see with different eyes? And that's a preview, hopefully, of what some of us can experience this evening later. So thank you. Thank you. Lee or Jackie, please.
You've heard my story about the ice storm, so I'll keep it short, but I had to lead with it since my future self did come to me at that time and I didn't know what it was. When the electricity and water were off due to the ice storm, I experienced severe anxiety, panic attacks, and depression. My thinking was scattered. My brain was yelling instructions at me as to what I needed to do to survive. My future self came to me in a calm, loving, and reassuring voice, saying that I must get control since there were more difficult days ahead of me and I couldn't stay in this state of mind. I immediately felt a shift in my being that felt strong and confident, knowing that I could survive with God's help. My chaotic mind calmed down and was able to think more clearly as to what steps to take for our survival. And to this day, I can still feel that I usually do throughout the day. And so I'm really grateful.
Thank you, Jackie. We had a little difficulty hearing you because it seems like your internet's a little slow, but it sounded like you did have a transformational experience that your future self came to you during that time. So thank you for your sharing. Thank you. Pam, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I into my time body and future self and realized that a lot of what I have perceived was based on my parents' experience, what I observed with them, particularly my dad. And there was fear, but there was also calm around it. There was acceptance, I guess you would say, but it wasn't necessarily a positive picture. And I, for many years, have used future memory, usually a short-term thing like a weekend, a family gathering, whatever, but it has always been so powerful and so positive that it occurred to me that future memory is such a powerful tool and one that can be used over and over again as I age and as I reach into this future self, and that all will be well because that's what I wish for. And that will manifest. I have that confidence now through future memory that will be my future self.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's a very helpful vision for mm-hmm. sure. And we'll end with Becky, please.
Hey, I'm many years ago, I worked with a mentor who kind of did, I guess, body work or a lot of what we're talking about tonight. He called it inner child work. And one of the, somebody that I've always had a lot of resentment towards is my dad. And we were practicing, I guess, like, you know, future memory, and although we didn't call it that. And one of the things that I received was make amends, which I thought was very strange because I felt like I was right to be angry. And even my mentor felt like I did as well. And fast forward, like, you know, now I'm doing the 12 steps and I'm in my fourth step and I'm looking, doing my inventory is all, you know, time body work. And I'm looking at all this stuff that I'm writing down. I'm like, man, I'm doing a lot of this too to my kids. And it just really kind of puts it into perspective of the innocence and the just the human error that that just happens in families. And, you know, a lot of compassion and forgiveness arises. And I think like the 12 steps also is offers time body promises, the 12 promises that I think collectively, you know, throughout generations, you know, as a people that have done these steps, you know, kind of hold that time body collective spirit together for everybody on that journey. So I'm really grateful for that.
Thank you, Becky. I like how you spoke of the innocence, because we are all innocent. Ultimately, we are. So thank you all for sharing. There was a lot of work done clearly these last 2 weeks. So we'll move on to our topic for tonight, which is suffering in the body of Christ. And when I first saw that I was going to be leading this topic, I thought, why are we doing suffering after Easter? We had 40 days of Lent, then we finally got to resurrection and now suffering? But, you know, and so then I realized, well, wait a minute, we can look at suffering through a resurrection lens. I mean, we actually resurrect suffering every time we do the work. And we will engage in an experience of an updated form of the work, which is Byron Katie's self-inquiry this evening, which we'll go to in a moment. But I just first wanted to focus on a little bit on one type of suffering that we experience, which is useless suffering. We will be talking next week more about intentional suffering, although in this practice there is an aspect of that. But our useless suffering is something that happens most often. And the bottom line is that when we suffer uselessly, we're negatively identified with something, someone, or ourselves. We're either with some past event, like Gay was speaking of, or some future thing, like Tracy was talking about, some future imagination. And we're basically in that moment believing that there's a problem here and that something should be different. And what does that do? Well, when we're identified, our feeling of I goes out there. We're not home. There's nobody home. We're like the walking dead, as Gurdjieff or Spensky, I can't remember who said that. We're asleep. We're in that waking state of consciousness where nobody's home and we're out of the present moment. And so in that state, really, when we're thinking things should be different than they are, we're basically arguing with reality, arguing with what is. And Byron Katie says that when I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time. So we're going to, I'm going to attempt to have you have an experience of this process, this practice of self-inquiry, which is basically four questions and what Katie calls turnarounds. Now, Byron Katie had a transformational experience after 10 years of deep, deep depression, suicidal thoughts, terrible fears. And it was basically one day she woke up and it was all gone. It was like she died. In fact, she describes it as that she died. And with that went all her memories of her life as well. Very interesting. But in that moment, what was left was a knowing of her oneness with everything, oneness with everything. And these questions were given to her in the moment. And so I'd like to give us a taste of this practice, and it really deserves a lot more time, but I think it's such a wonderful tool. And it's so similar to the work of our work of Inner Christianity. To me, it's an updated version, a simplified updated version. So I feel it's useful for us to go through this. And I know some of you, many of you have perhaps, but certainly won't help, hurt. Hopefully it'll help, not hurt. So one of the main things to remember that's really important about this practice is that it's a practice of stillness. It's a meditation. It's not a thinking exercise. It's a meditation. It's very much like Lectio Divina in the sense where you're sitting and you're in this quiet listening space in your own interior stillness and you're listening for what arises. And so that's very much what this practice is about. And so to prepare for that, let's all just get to a place. Let's put our attention on our breath. Bring your attention to your breath and the interior of your body, the center of your body. Allow your breath to be free. Find a still place within you. And so the first step, what we need to do is we're going to meditate on today. Let's look at today. And you can keep your eyes closed. You can keep them open, whatever works for you. Look at today and find a stressful situation that involved someone else. Katie says to point the finger outward first. Now, as work students, we know it all ends up back with us. However, we're judging people all the time, whether we're aware of it or not. And those thoughts arise, right? So find a stressful situation that involved someone where you didn't like something they did, you got identified around someone else. And really see yourself there. And now if you're totally enlightened, you can go back in your time body to find another moment. But if not today, yesterday, last week, 2 years ago, whatever works for you, find a stressful moment. And then see if you can state to yourself a very concise statement uses a should or shouldn't. In other words, like blank he, she, they, it can be a group if you want, should or shouldn't blank. So for example, now I didn't tell my husband I was going to use him, but sorry, Jim. So my situation is I'm standing in the kitchen. A little bit ago, I had told my husband that I not to put a specific glass in the dishwasher. And now I'm standing in the kitchen knowing he loaded the dishwasher and the glass isn't there. It's in the dishwasher. So I'm simplifying my statement to my husband should listen to me. That's a good one to question. So I'm going to use that as an example. My husband should listen to me. So, you know, be with yourself in a still place. What stressful situation arises? And find a short statement. If they become long, they're much harder to go through this process with. So blank, should or shouldn't, whatever you felt in that moment. We're looking at a moment in your time body. So this is time body work as well, like our other classes, another form of it. Right? So mine is, my husband should listen to me. And so now I'm gonna take us through the process. Hopefully everybody's got something that they can apply this to. All right, so be there in that moment, in that stressful situation where you felt stressful thought arise, belief. See yourself there, make it as clear as possible. What were you wearing? What was, if the other person's in the room, they don't have to be, but if the other person's in the room, see it all in as much detail as possible. And then just repeat that statement to yourself to keep reminding you, to bring you back, kind of like your sacred word. Okay. For me, my husband should listen to me. And then the first question, is it true? Is this thought you're believing, is it true? The answer to the first two questions is one syllable, either yes or no. So we're looking at this situation, yes or no, is it true, this thought? The mind might go, well, no, but I really think, well, come back just to the statement, settle, is it true? Yes or no, and both answers are valid. There's no right or wrong here at all. Okay. If your answer was no, you can skip question two. If it was yes, fine. We go to question two. Can you absolutely know for sure? Can you really know that this is true? That my husband should listen to me? Can I absolutely know for sure? Yes. Now. Okay. So then we move on to question three. Now, this is a process of complete self, three-centered self-observation of a moment in your time body. All right. So be there in that moment. Now, how do you react in that moment? Gay gave us some clues about this. She saw in that moment that she talked about. How do you react? What happens when you believe this thought? Take a full three-centered observation. What are the sensations in your body in that moment? Where are they? What emotions arise? What images come from that emotional center? Images are the language of the emotional center. Past images, future images that arise with that thought. Keep reminding yourself, my husband should listen to me, but whatever yours is. What thoughts come? What other thoughts? Really look, you're the observer. You're noticing what's going on with you in that moment in your time body. And also part of looking at this as to what happens, when how do you react, is how do you treat this person when you're believing this thought? How do you treat the other person? If they're there in the room, do you give them a look? Do you say something? What do you say? What's your tone of voice? What body language? How do you treat that person? You're believing the thought, my husband should listen. And if they're not in the room, you're treating them in a certain way in your mind. So how are you doing that way? Also, as part of this looking at what happens, is how do you treat yourself? Are you seeing yourself as better than, smarter than, or is the critic really active? Are there a lot of self-critical thoughts? So treating yourself not well. Just notice, and you believe that thought. Now, you could sit in that one for a long time, but unfortunately, we need to move on. So the next step is the step of non-identification. So question 4 is, who are you, or who would you be in that moment without the thought? You can't think it. It doesn't even occur to you to think it. Thought is gone. That statement, my husband should listen, is gone. I'm in that moment without my story. Everything in question 3 goes away. What's it like? How is it different? Does your body feel different? About your emotional center, intellectual center? You can take a step back as if you're in the room, you're the observer in the room, and take a look at this other person if they're in the room without your story. Just look at them, just see them. What do you see? Look at yourself. Look at yourself. What do you see there? What we want to see is the reality of the situation without any of the interpretation, without the story. It's all gone. It all isn't there. What do you see? What's the reality? So those are the 4 questions. And you can sit in that 4th question for quite a while. It's non-identification and truly is an opportunity to self-remember. We know that, how to do that, or to practice it. And it's a good opportunity to do that in that moment too. Now the next part is interesting. I'm going to share it on the screen because the turnarounds can be a little bit confusing. They're not, but for some reason, some people get hung up on them. But this is a process that expands your mind to see other possibilities, to see your part. And to me, it brings me to a place of external considering and compassion, not only for the other person, for myself, for what, who was it a moment ago was talking about, oh, Pam. This innocence, this knowledge of everyone is innocent. You really get that in this step. So you take your original statement. So mine is, here's mine. My husband should listen to me. So there are 3 ways to turn them around. And I mean, there could be more, but we're going to take these 3. Don't have to do them in this order. And then the idea is just to take each, try them on. it's again, we're meditating in that turnaround to see what could be true. They might not be, but just to see. And it's pretty amazing what can come up. So the first suggestion is to turn it to the 180 degree opposite. The original is my husband should listen to me. So this opposite would be my husband shouldn't listen to me. Okay, how could that be true? I've already gone through this, so I'm thinking it right now, but I just wanted to give you examples. So examples of how my husband shouldn't listen to me. Well, he shouldn't because he didn't. That's a reality. If I argue with the reality of it, I'm suffering again. He shouldn't, okay, he didn't. He shouldn't listen to me because actually who he listens to and when he listens is his business. Katie talks about three different kinds of business: my business, your business, and God's business. And we suffer when we're in God's business or other people's business. So that's his business. My husband shouldn't listen to me. It could be also that I'm nagging, so he shouldn't listen to me. Why would I want him to? Another turnaround is to myself. So the original, my husband should listen to me. The turnaround would be, I should listen to me. That's interesting. So I sit with that one. I should listen to me. Well, if I want listening done, then I should listen to me. Okay, I should listen to me. I should have listened to me when I thought to wash the glass myself by hand. I feel like I should always listen to me because otherwise I'm not connected with my deeper self. Okay, those are examples. You could maybe find more. And then the third turnaround, my husband should listen to me, would be to the other, I should listen to my husband. Yeah, that's definitely true or truer. I should, in that moment, and I should have mentioned all these, we stick with this one moment. If you generalize, it can get harsh. If you stay with this one moment in the kitchen there, I should listen to my husband. I should listen to his body language. He was doing something else while I was telling him. I should listen to that. I should listen to my husband, what he says. Do I listen to him? Did I listen to him? I don't remember if he said anything. So I really should listen to him. And I should listen to him because when I don't listen and I get identified, that cuts our connection. I don't have any connection with him anymore. So that's an example of how you do the turnarounds. And a very quick journey through this process. And I'll ask for feedback in a moment, but I did want to just mention that question. Let me go back to this. Question one and two, is it true? Can you absolutely know it's true? And four, who are you without this thought, can be really a wonderful on-the-go practice of non-identification. If you feel something come up, if you ask yourself immediately, is this true? It can stop it. Or can I really know that this thing I'm thinking or getting, is that really true? And then, I start getting identified with something. I wake up and I go, oh, who am I without this story? Because we add so much to everything. We interpret everything. What if I just drop the story? What would it be like now in this moment without this story? So the power of this, of course, and all our work tools, the power of this practice has been transformational for me. And I wanted to kind of tie this in with the body of Christ. And read this wonderful quote from Katie. She says, I discovered that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered, but then when I didn't believe them, I didn't suffer. That's really key. With the thought, I suffer. Without the thought, I don't suffer. And that this is true for every human being. Freedom is as simple as that. I found that suffering is optional. I found a joy within me that has never disappeared, not for a single moment. That joy is in everyone always. And this picture, this image just speaks to that, to me. It feels like resurrection. When we do this work or any of our other work tools, we are resurrected from suffering through our sacrifice of it. Really, question three is intentional suffering. We are intentionally suffering in that moment, that suffering that we had, but consciously. So every time we do that, or we do any of the work, we are taking a little piece out of that whole web of the pain body, which you'd say Eckhart Tolle calls our pain body, but also the collective pain body, or say the pain body of Christ, the suffering of our common father, as the work would talk about. And Marianne spoke to that too. Our work is so important, and it does serve everyone at every moment. So, all right, well, I'd like to open it up now to see if you had, if you saw anything, you learned anything through that, if you were even able to enter the practice at all. But I'd like to hear from you, anything you'd like to reflect back. Marcia, please.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I blamed somebody totally close for this event that happened a couple nights ago. And now I realize that I had a huge part in it. And I was very identified. And I blamed it all on him and started looking at the other ways I could have handled it without identification. Mm-hmm. Was really positive. I mean, talked about how wrong he was and mm-hmm. got angry at him.
Yes.
And now I realize I was just as obnoxious, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel for you, though, it's like it's heavy that you see it now. Does it feel heavy to you?
No, it feels good.
Yes.
It feels good. It feels like I realize it and I won't hold it against him.
Wonderful. Yes. If we go deeply enough in question three, then the turnarounds don't feel harsh. And then when we see our part, again, we feel our innocence. It's except for, I mean, we can't expect anything else from ourselves because we're thinking and believing something in the moment. And if there's nothing else we could do because we're thinking and believing something, right? So yes, thank you so much. Thank you, Marcia.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Leanne, please.
I had an experience today in my journey group where we practiced this work. Okay. I practiced it and I was asked the questions, and it was just so powerful for me. And I've done this work with you in journey group too. But this time when I dropped the story, there was love left, and that was what came in. And it was so amazing to me to see how in dropping one storyline and not having it there to hold on to prop me up, what could come in. it just, and that love, it was amazing.
Yes. And it's interesting because sometimes just one belief like that, when it you understand it, it's really understanding we're getting. When we see it very clearly like that, a whole bunch of other ones that were stuck to it go away too. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a big thing.
Right. And so I remember one time Marianne saying, talking about a situation where she was being love. And so to be in a situation and know that it could go so many different ways, and yet to be there in a place of love when you do start dropping all of those storylines that I prop myself up with.
Yes.
So yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the introduction, Bev.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Don or Deborah?
It's me this time, Bev. Hi, good evening. Mm-hmm. Just to kind of put what Leanne just said in a different words, I guess, is my experience going through this just now. And it kind of started this morning when I read the email. Opened up a completely new level of experiencing Jesus's line, words, love one another as I have loved you. Because I felt, and I just knew it, every time we read the Gospels, right? We feel Jesus is opening up of himself and welcoming in everyone into this joy-filled light body. And Christ is that in the world. He's shown us that that is the world, the actual reality of the world. And my story keeps me from experiencing that. And it certainly keeps me from being that kind of world to everyone that I have a story about.
Yes.
And so this evening, I really was coming back out of this experience. I saw a whole nother level of engagement, certainly all three lines of the work, but the second line of the work, external considering, has a whole nother meaning for me. Mm-hmm. How can I remember that I can be this joyous receptacle of everyone? And if I've got a story, or if I have a problem with anyone, then I am not a world that is as welcoming as I wish to be.
Right, and it's just a signal that you're believing something that's yes. against your true nature.
And that's how I can really owe everything to everyone who gives me the opportunity to work. Yes,
exactly. And that's what it said in the email, that it brings you to that I owe you everything, you owe me nothing. And everyone is our teachers, and everything that we're given is a gift. Thank you, Don.
Amen.
Well, thank you all. I hope that was useful for you. And let's take a moment to look at the the homework. That's another quote I don't have really time for, but so if you try to work with this week, using the four questions and the turnarounds. It's in the email, it'll be in this PowerPoint that'll be online, or you can go to Katie's work website, which is listed there in the email too. Everything you need to know about the practice is there. And I recommend also, really an important part of this is writing it down, going through it, writing, she says, and it's true that when you write, the mind stops. Put the mind on paper. Because your mind, if you're trying to do it in your head, the mind can go off. So, and then also experiment using questions 1, 2, and or 4 as that in the moment practice of non-identification. And then see really what I wanted to emphasize too is a seeing of reality. ultimate reality, like our email said last time, last week. It's the work practice of seeing without associations, but drop your stories, drop the labels, let it all go. Especially when you take a walk in nature, you know, for a few moments a day, look around, just look, just behold, just see the clear, pure reality of the moment. It's really being here in that eternal now. And yes, and stay grounded in your body, in all your senses. And then there are three videos listed in the email that are wonderful to watch. One is Katie explaining the work process in her own wonderful words. And then the other two are her working with two different men. And it's such a gift to see her work with others. So thank you all for your attention, and may your work be fruitful this week. Thank you to you, Marianne.
Thank you so much, Beverly. That work was very useful. Thank you so much, and everyone who participated. So a closing word for us from Rodney Collin. Two men were going home when they met the master without recognizing him. He accompanied them on the road and taught them. When they arrived at Emmaus, he entered into their house and revealed himself as the divine master. Those of us who go by the fourth way meet the master without recognizing him, and he teaches us. If we invite him into our house, he will manifest himself to us. For this to happen, it is necessary that we should be at home, that is, be present to ourselves. May it be so. Especially this week. So let us join together in prayer together and have our voices resound out into the universe that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully, and how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, while we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.